Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
It's not, no music. Okay, guys, we decided to come on early today than our normal 5 o'clock slot, basically because there is a lot of news in terms of the passing of our friend Jessica Klein, and we wanted to get out here early just to start talking about her and this. And Larry is in Martha's Vineyard, and his computer is, of course, not working. He has the Delphi service, I guess, from back in the day. Chuck, this is not an easy day for us here at the show. I mean, and you obviously know Jessica for a very long time. I'm just going to give the floor to you to start talking about her.
Well, my time with Jessica were the years that we were at my prime time, wasn't prime time, were the years that we worked together. We were both represented by the same agency, Broder Kurland Webb. I was a Webb. She and Steve were Kurlands. And I met them when I was the supervising producer of Northern Exposure. And Steve and Jess came in and were approved by my bosses, Josh Brand and John Falsey, to write an episode. And we did one together, and I had to say goodbye to them right in the middle of it, because then I was going over to work for Aaron Spelling, not knowing that a year later, Jessica would be, and Steve would be following me as my first freelance assignment. April is the cruelest month. And on the basis of these just being really, you know, veteran TV people, 90210 after that first season that we had really needed some of that kind of stability. And they were a really facile and really good writing team. Steve was really strong in concept and in the pathos of what was going on and in kind of higher things. Jess really got down in the dirt, took the notes, and really was, I found her, and Larry, jump right in here, because this is that she was really also really adept at dialogue.
That was one of her strengths. She was the typewriter. Steve didn't type. He dictated to her.
Ben, and she, but that she too was always, you know, really there. She loved the theater. And I remember her telling me about going with her mother to the stage door to get autographs of Broadway shows and things like that. She was a real New York, baby boomer in that regard, and certainly a survivor, a daughter's of survivor. And which really, you know, here's this time, you know, Jessica is gone. And yet, and I know between her and her daughter, Shira, this deep, abiding faith in the Lord above, in Adonai, is really what's carrying her feelings right now, the emotion, the thoughts about her, that she is. I remember my rabbi telling me that basically the Jewish religion is just about preparing you for death, and Jessica has been in that mode. She knew she had cancer for the past year. We could tell here on the podcast. I remember once saying to you guys, did she look pale to you? Because she did to me. And then about a month later, she shared with us that she was sick and wouldn't be doing. And then there were other times you invited her to come on, Pete, and she couldn't, even before we knew. And but you know, she got so much. Larry and I were both at Shira's wedding. You were there, right, Larry? I think
yes, absolutely.
And sure. And I know that how much solace and joy Shira and the life that Shira has created with her husband and Jessica's grandchildren has meant to Jess. So I think that there was, you know, she lost her second husband in Virginia, and you probably knew him better than I did.
I had had dinner with him once. That was about it. But he's a lovely thing.
We'd run into them in Writers Guild Theater. You never went to the Writers Guild Theater too much, but I remember we were in town people, so we went all the time, especially when we lived in Carthay. And she and Isaac were kind of regular, so we would see them once in a while there. And I think they had a dinner maybe at least once up at Kate Manolini's.
Oh, afterwards. God bless it. Yeah.
Yeah. But, thinking of her today, it will always be impossible for me not to always Jessica Klein, you know, going right back to our times at 90210 and just, you know, the value. And I know that we're going to be doing a tribute show.
I was just going to say, we're going to really go full throttle and do a tribute show and look at some of the times that she was here on the podcast, but also some of the things that she wrote, and we'll invite some guests and we'll really go into all of this. But we wanted to get sort of started talking about her and what's going on. I'm getting a lot of messages from the cast and from, from fans wanting to know what they can do. And we just wanted to come on here and start talking about the impact that she had, not only on 90210, but even joining us here through the few years that we've been doing this. Larry, what are your thoughts about this today? And have you got how's your computer going too, first of all?
Not well.
Okay.
But I can't seem to get it going again. I've got to give some attention to it in a bit. But, you know, it's like a body blow. Even though we kind of knew it was coming in the last couple of weeks, it just seems she was young. You know what I mean? She was still pretty young and vivacious and so bright. You know, she was a Harvard graduate and just was threw herself into everything. You know, as we do the tribute show, we really talk about it, you know, the kind of stuff that she really excelled in, which for me, my only memory is how good she was in that spelling office, man, which she would take the lead on that. And I was so glad someone else was taking the lead. It could somehow get to the old man. She was wonderful, you know.
And we'll talk a little bit.
And also as a grandmother, as a mother, you know, it's a loss for a lot of people who really loved her very dearly.
And just to say about this cast, I heard about this, and you know that we were getting more serious in her illness, and I reached out to all of them, and they all sent well wishes and sometimes videos and whatnot. You had a really good group of people here that really care about everybody that was a part of this. And I want to share one little funny clip of Jessica on our podcast. And I thought this would be just what she brought to the table. She always had that little hilarious.
I just wanted to say just for one second, and as you're looking at the people at home or something, or the different places, I'm going to move for a second. And just that behind me is not wallpaper. That is the sun setting over the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, that's beautiful, Charles. Look at that. Oh, my God. Look at this.
Wow.
We even get this kind of stuff happening here on the show, right? Larry, do you love this stuff? Right?
I do.
Did it work?
The outfit she's wearing.
Jessica showed her kitchen as well, as you gave an example of what your background looked like, Charles. Jessica.
I see.
Well, it was a very nice kitchen, Jess. I'm sure you made really good. I'm sure you baked goods there.
Earlier, we are going to talk about this show, Under the Influence. That is where we're going next. But this morning, we interviewed Mark Damon Espinoza because we were covering his section of the show. And he had just found out about Jessica. So here's a portion of Mark talking about Jessica. Okay.
Oh, hey, repeat?
Yes. That's okay.
You're recording?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Is everything okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Here we are with Mark Damon Espinoza, and it's Chuck and Larry, and we're doing a little something this morning. Mark, you know, of course, we're probably going to be talking about this on the podcast. So we learned that Jessica Klein passed away earlier this morning. Did you want to say anything about Jessica while we have you here to start?
I mean, it is brand new news to me. So I'm a little bit at a loss for words, except that I just have such fond memories of dealing with Jessica and meeting Jessica, you know, early on in the audition process, and coming to find out that the character was inspired by a real life relationship that she had had. Had she married this particular fellow, her name would have been Jessica Vasquez. Chuck, that's correct, right? His last name was Vasquez? A boyfriend of hers?
I think that it's true. I think she told us that on the podcast, too. Yeah.
See, because, I guess I'm the one that has a memory lapse here, because I feel I'm learning this for the first time.
Oh, really?
That was a real thing.
I knew there was the guy. But I didn't know he was a Vasquez.
I'm going with that, but I don't.
I'm going with it, too. Let's roll with it.
Yeah.
You know what?
It works better for the story.
I believe Jessica. And anyway, my heart goes out to her. Her kids, I really am at a loss of words. She was just a bright light, you know.
And she was a very warm booby. She was a great grandma. She loved that role. She loved the role of a Jewish grandma, and just as well, much as she loved the role as of the Hollywood professional, you know.
Right.
Whenever she found herself in life, she embraced where she was and did what she had to do and made loads of friends and loads of memories.
Yeah.
Very important voice.
She kept moving around. It's like she was in Charlottesville and kind of took over that town, then went to Toronto.
Exactly.
And she became a kosher booby, as Chuck said. She was certainly.
Well, I remember, maybe I probably should say this for the podcast.
But yes.
We're all together here now.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, peace going, save it. when. You remember, Larry, when Luke passed away, and we went and there was the session for him on memorial service for him at the studio. Sure. It was on a Saturday afternoon, and she on a Friday night went to a motel in walking distance from the studio so she could walk there and not violate the. Tenets of orthodoxy, which she subscribed to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She all of a sudden embraced, but she certainly wasn't that during our show. I mean, you're absolutely right. She had a great zest for whatever she was in. And she was such an achiever. I mean, she went to Harvard and whatever. I mean, Ivy League gal.
That was earlier today. Look, I just want to say here, in talking for the fans, I mean, every time we did an episode of the podcast and Jessica joined us, I always got messages that they just absolutely loved when she was with us. And they all adored her and loved her insight into all of the characters, the triangle. Remember, we did that fun one. And, you know, I know Jenny and her had a special bond, and so did Ian with the episode Sentence to Life that we're going to cover at some point as well and as the tribute. But I just really love Jessica Klein. She's somebody that would talk to me, like email with me when we were first getting started and give me some stories, and just such a kind soul. And I'm just really grateful for this podcast that I got the opportunity to meet her, and of course you guys as well, but we're focused on Jessica today. Okay, I'm going to get started here with the actual podcast. Larry, is there anything that you want to add?
No, because I want to say for the tribute, I really haven't really given it a deep thought other than just the loss. And just look, I mean, I'm of this age. People are falling off the conveyor belt left and right for me. So, yeah, it's a little sobering. I also love Steve very much. So And it just, I mean, she went through a lot. She went through two husbands. And poor Shira, I think about her, and, you know, she's experienced a lot of loss. And my heart goes out to her. And I know she's strong, and she's got so much family. And we'll be thinking of them. I mean, I'm not going to be able to be at the Shivet, but I'm going to light a candle and think about it.
Yeah, I think that's really important to mention. Chuck, any last thoughts about this before we get into the actual podcast?
Well, I like Larry, a lot of the anecdotes I would save. I do also you know, oftentimes when you you ultimately get around to the service for somebody, you know, they talk about it, a celebration of life. And Jessica loved to celebrate. Jessica may have ended up the kosher booby, but I remember when Jessica just was, you know, a young mom who liked to party and was a fun person to be with. And they had great parties up at their house. And I'll be sharing some memories about those.
I have one thing that you made me think of, Chuck, which is a small thing, but I remember, like, you know, being on staff, and, you know, you're in the trenches, you know, day in and day out. And at one point she said, she called in and said, we're having a mental health day. I had never heard of this. I had never heard of someone taking off work and calling it a mental health day. But I could only imagine her and Steve were having a hell of a time somewhere.
So not only did she invent Donna Martin graduates, but also a mental health day, which we all have used somewhere in our lives.
Totally legal. It was totally legal with the production schedule to have a mental health day. You know, I never pulled that card myself.
Especially for a writer producer, they have a special relationship with time. Yes, you can take that.
All right, so we're going to play our intro, and when we come back, we're going to start on.
If you give me a
under the influence,
I might be able to get online on my computer. So
okay, also, great.
Also, before you,
we are live. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to check my sound.
Okay, you sound great.
So I sound great.
You sound great to me.
I did not sound great. I thought when we did the replay of me with Mark.
Mm. Okay, well, that might be the audio levels of that. Okay, let's just move into the beginning of this actual show under the influence.
Well, wait a second. I'm just trying to see if I can get out
loud. I'm sounding okay.
You sound wonderful. You know, somebody messaged me the other day.
I sound wonderful.
And you know how we always try to.
This is the Jessica.
We're live right now. Yeah, so somebody told me the other day, you know, I like to try to edit. We were talking about this, and they said. They love when we talk about our stuff like this. When we just do our random talk, they really love. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Just go ahead. I'll just jump in the middle of it, I guess, and change courses. I think it's going to work. No, not positive.
Okay. Anyway, so when we come back,
Glenn is here. Fantasy Fanny's here.
Well, everybody's here to share their love about Jessica, and we are like Chuck said, we are going to do a very big tribute show for her that we'll need some time to put together, but it's going to be really, really incredible. So
we would have to be dressed much better, also.
Yes. Okay.
There'll be a dress code for that show.
What's wrong with my shirt?
So that's the next. Larry, that's the next super show. The Jessica Klein super show is the next one. All right. Okay. So, yeah, right. Okay, let's get the show going.
I'll wear a cravat for that.
Jacket. Yeah, exactly. I wear my usual sport jacket when I, you know, think about things like that. I get wear it every day.
All right. Beginning of the show. And then you're going to switch devices at some point, Larry, is what you're telling me.
Yes, I will.
Yes,
I'll,
okay.
Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change, we still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans, are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode, storyline by storyline, character by character, as we break down the making of your favorite zip code with your host. Charles
Rosen.
Did
I say that?
Jeez. Harry Mullen.
This foolish thing about the real person. And we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests. And all your questions. Live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so now this is the portion of the show where we're going to talk about Under the Influence. Larry, you still do not have
I'm under the influence.
You still
you're under somebody's influence. I don't know who it is influence. Right now. But
you know, I am clumsily doing this thing, but I will switch over to a desktop soon. My computer is just, you know, says not responding.
You got nice vineyard light in the background.
Are you referring to the internet is not responding or the computer itself?
No, my Google's Chrome, basically.
Oh, I understand. That could be very challenging. And I don't know anything about that. So, okay. But so,
My internet should be fine. It seems to be fine.
The start of season 5.
Woo! Love it.
Charles, you have told me, or everybody here on the podcast, that it felt to you at times that you did five different TV shows in the five seasons that you were there. So let's talk about the start of season five. And what was this television show for you?
This TV show was called Tiffany. And because there was no longer Shannon.
Right.
And so we had an entire character to create. And we wanted to, you know, there'd been so much pressure from season one about where's the bad girl? We need the bad girl, you know. So we had Tiffany be a kind of a almost like a grifter from Buffalo, you know.
Really, which, amoral, totally amoral.
Yeah, and you know, it would definitely, and you know, knowing now, you know, I lived in Toronto for the year 2001, and since I did, I know that there were a lot of like young women from Buffalo in Toronto, because if you were going to grift, that's where you would go. New York's too far. Toronto's a big Larry knows Toronto much, much better than I do, but it's a big metropolis. It's a big
well, Larry, do you know grifting as well? Did you have
because a show business is a grift.
Sure.
You know, you try to get the marks.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. You know,
grift. But you give some entertainment along with the grift. That's part of the thing. That's why you pay the piper.
But anyway, getting back to you know,
the influence.
The show and this kind of thing. So it was a question of, it's not the focus. You would think we had just introduced her. She had just, oh my God, she's got pot. They have pot on the show now. Pot on the show. First right. time. Well, influence of Larry Mullen, I'm sure. the thing was, is that no, our first, we get to the teaser, and all of a sudden, this is about Donna Martin, who was in the background for the entire scene, now announcing, I'm not going back to college. Pow. Yeah. Audience not prepared for it, got to react to it, and we're off. Oh,
yeah.
But also, while this is happening, we downplayed it in the first episode. But yeah, Dylan McKay has been robbed to the tune of $8 to $10 million.
Yeah.
So yeah, at the same time, Brandon Walsh is in a deep relationship with Kelly Taylor. And although the good friends found out about it the episode before, Dylan finds out about it here.
Yeah.
In other words, 902. Oh, and Andrea, who's got her baby, Gabby's got the baby. And our friend, Mark Damon Espinoza, who I think we're going to be talking with a little later in the show. You know, are looking for how are they going to raise their child? And it seemed like daycare was going to be the right way. And you know, the mom has the doubts. And basically, the interesting part about that for me is in that conversation, that moment where they're saying, oh, it'll be so cute to see this, this, and this, is exactly what I was saying to Karen, to say, you know, don't worry. I mean, he was, you know, telling her how cute Lindsay was that morning. And the cutest I've ever seen her. And Karen went, uh-oh, fear of missing out. Goodbye, career. Goodbye, pipe dreams. I'm a mommy, you know. So that was...
We should give the credits. This is a script that was written by Chip Johannesson and directed by Scott Pauling. And we particularly love Chip's scripts. They're all very unique in a certain way. There's lots of great chunky pieces of dialogue and reveals and scenes. Well done, Chip.
And his scene construction, let's just start with that. It's my favorite, almost my favorite moment. We said about it was really important to establish Tiffany. And there was Tiffany, Valerie, standing there and asking about what Josh Richland saying to her, can you help me convince him to run? And looking at this with the most benign confidence and salaciousness, all wrapped up to one look, and says, reads Chip's line, probably could. And it was just, you know, and it was just that kind of thing. there are a few others to just Blondie and the Boy Scout. You know, I mean, Chip just would roll the verbiage, and really, you know, he started in season three, and he did great stuff. And season four, you know, really, you know, came in, you know, so much of the stuff and was real important in all ways. But this season, but he just, when we went a little darker and a little more serious, he just opened it up. And, you know, you always knew
he'd
come up with great ideas. So for me, Larry, the one thing, if Chip was on here, what he would be talking about is because he liked to do his research. So he did the research about that Texas dip. Really limber, a really nice move.
I would really encourage his otter side. I would sit there in the room with him, we share an office a lot of times, and really just push his end there because he really had that. And he pushed it with me too. It was a lot of fun. There's a scene though that really I thought, you know, because again, the big thing that's happening here is that Dylan started to drink, he's lost his money. Brandon's back with Kelly, and they have not told him.
Right,
and we're going through half this episode like this, and all of a sudden he sees Nat, and basically he's got to throw Jim and Cindy out of the peach pit.
What about that? He tells them they're no longer welcome
there, which was fantastic because it's very James Dean. And this whole episode has so much of the Jet Ring character and Giant to me when I
look and at he it. Wouldn't but, he wouldn't even let us talk about it. He wouldn't. We were playing him partially as James Dean.
Sure,
he looked it. And he could do it. I'm feeling sorry for myself right now, but you don't hate me. You actually, you know, like me. You want to be with me, you know. But he allowed himself to have that vulnerability.
The reveal. What's so great about that whole thing with Brandon Kelly is that Nat just throws it out there.
Everything.
That's how he finds out. Nat delivers the news.
It's an offhanded way.
When you have secrets and then you get busted like that, you know, it's really good. We really love that. We earned that.
It is true. What you love about it is it's not one of the others. Like Donna didn't reveal it, you know, I mean, or whatnot. It's Nat that reveals it. He's gossiping like one of the kids would, you know what I mean? In a confrontational way with Dylan, because he just threw out the Walshes and said that they're not welcome here anymore. You know what I mean? So it's a very good Joey Tata scene.
The other thing is, everyone thinks Dylan still has money. No one knows his secret, which has been totally fleeced.
Well, that's what also struck me thinking about the arc, which now follows that storyline, is that it takes a while, and I think it's Valerie who reveals it finally to the Walshes.
It is.
Jim, but it's about two to three episodes down the line. You know, I mean, we kept that conceit that there still was money there going for a while.
Yeah.
Until we needed the plot to move to intervention. He's got no money. Now we got to intervene. Now he drives the Porsche off. Now he's living the dreams of Dylan McKay, after which I collapse for the rest of my time.
The scene where he comes into the fundraiser.
Hold on that. I want to ask Chuck something about you. You said that you added. I want to go back to what you said about adding Tiffany. Was this an easy task to add a character? You know, this is not going to be someone that it's not a guest star, right? This is someone that's going to be with our show. We're now replacing a huge portion of the show. We're getting, you know, Brenda Walsh has been defined on this show for the last 4 years. And now you have to figure a way and write a character that is going to take your mind off of the fact that Brenda Walsh is not here anymore. And this is a new character that we all need. Tiffany does eventually pull this off. But talk to me about that process and how challenging that was for the writers and for you guys.
Well, if talking about her, then I know that there was, just the notion of a new actor. These guys had already been working together for 4 years. So she comes in and, it's a different kinds of process and are y'all getting everything else? So, you know, people would come to me to grumble and they would, you know, that first day, that second day, you know, is this, is where, what, the actors don't know where the relationship is going. Brandon really doesn't have, hasn't established this yet with their, who are they, all this. So they're playing freeform. So they want to, you know, it's a little crazy making, you know, in that regard. Change is always, that's what you want in a television series, right, Larry? It just goes smoothly, basically the same thing by degrees, and you go forward. Well, this is this was a major plop in here in this culture, this pop culture moment in the 90s where Brenda goes, Shannon goes, and here's Tiff. And she plays that scene, the next episode that we do, where she goes to the pool hall. She, even if she ultimately is playing a character as much as Laverne, Brenda was playing Laverne in season one, this is, you know, she's there. I'm going to be sexy gal here and I'm going to get you. And, you know, like the bad boy and wanted to be with the bad boy. And, you know, she won me over at that point. You know,
There's also the line she goes, "Oh, Brenda's stealing, or Kelly's stealing." Brenda's
stealing. I want to get to that whole thing. But the idea that she comes in, I think what you guys did really great was you played off of her. What we knew Tiffany Amber Thiessen as, we knew her as this girl from Saved by the Bell, and you brought her in under the, you know, this might be where
that meant nothing to me. I don't know if it meant anything to Larry. I didn't watch Saved by the Bell. I didn't follow Saved by the Bell.
Well, she's like the sweetheart. Do you know what I'm saying? She's the sweetheart, but she's not.
That wasn't the character. We told her what the character was going to be. She was not going to be surprised. Brian was surprised, but she wouldn't have been surprised when we told her about what the character was going to be. We were prepared out to be that.
Well, for the audience, though, she plays sweet. You know what I mean? She's playing sweet, but then we learn in the first couple episodes. Yeah, right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, in her audition, she showed that side. I mean, she's very beguiling and naive, theming, and, you know, we added the whole Buffalo thing, and she basically sucks everybody in like a true, you know, amoral grifter. and then reveals to you know, the audience who she really is. And you know, that character, I mean, also, she was such a team player. Chuck, you obviously saw the scene with the shared bathroom where Tiffany comes out in like a thong underwear.
And it's like bra and panties. Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, okay. I can't believe she did that.
I know. I mean,
very, very brazen, and also, you know, beautifully statuesque.
Oh my God.
It just made me think, you know, was that an opportunity? Did we even explore that, you know, that really putting more of Tiffany's effort to Brandon? I'm surprised you guys didn't do it in season six.
Well, you know, it's hard because they're so close, but we did, you know, at the end of season five, obviously they kissed.
Yeah, I mean,
season ender. That was pretty cool.
Okay, so this thing with Dylan, and there's a lot of good things that are happening with Dylan. Somebody here wrote that Luke was at his best in this season, and I think he really did get a lot of good stuff. We immediately see him, you know, getting into it at the bank. By the way, nowadays, I said to Larry when we were watching it, it would just come up as a fraud alert. You know what I mean? As a text message. But then he does run into Donna, and even though he's having all this money problems, he buys a table at this event, right?
Well, he keeps the illusion going, right?
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't want anybody to know.
He's got butts.
Yeah. And then he does show up to the event because he does get tipped off from Nat, like Larry just mentioned. Let's talk about that scene. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, you know, that's, you know, if you remember the movie Giant, there's a scene just like that where James Dean comes in drunk and upsets this whole, you know, kind of a gathering of, you know, swell folk. And it was really good. And in fact, he actually does the same thing Luke did, which was put his boot up on the table, which is a natural move. And and it just played great. I mean, there's so many things going on there because, you know, I mean, also we got to talk about the Sean Hardell, you know.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole other part.
But from Dylan.
But the friend's reaction to Dylan, though, and again, Brandon lied to him. He never told him about the Kelly thing. So, I mean, Brandon's defenseless in this thing, and Luke just kind of eats him up.
Yeah. And then, of course, he goes to the bar. He goes to Dehaney's, where, you know, our story slam takes place as well, Maggie's story slam.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we see. him go to Jesse, and I'm going to play Jesse or Mark Damon's clip later, but he does go to Mark Damon's character and is looking for a drink, and he meets this girl, and you know, he gets, we talked a little bit about what Mark saw, I'll save some of that for the clip, but you know, then we start seeing some body shots. Right, Larry?
Well, what happens is Brandon goes to seek him out and deal this with a one night stand, and it's this is something that Chip took great.
No, Kelly. Kelly goes to Dogo. No,
Kelly. Oh, Kelly. Oh my God, Kelly goes here. Yeah, I forgot. Kelly goes there, and Dylan. This is, I just remember when Chip was explaining to us what body shots were, because I did not know. Were you aware of body shots before this, Chuck?
Well, Karen, you know Karen and I. What more do I have to say?
Oh, okay, because I'm not a drinker, so I didn't know the thing there. And I noticed. Tell me if I'm wrong. We don't actually see the body shot, right? We just talk about it.
Oh no, I think it does it off of her neck. I'm pretty sure, right? Doesn't he put?
Oh, does
the,
he? Okay,
yeah,
great.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. I wasn't sure if we actually pulled the whole act off.
Right.
Oh, no, it's pulled off.
Oh, yeah. Good. Excellent. Well, it was very educational for the folks at home, and it was just a great little, you know, kept, again, the emotional reality of the show just kept propelling it. And, you know, you're drawing into this guy really sinking lower and lower. And then the Kelly thing was just, again, that's a great scene. You know, he just totally sees, she sees Dylan in a whole other light there, just where he is.
Maggie says, and the chick is wearing Kelly's robe. I didn't notice that. That's a good little. Ooh. I guess when you stream the show on Pluto, you know, a lot, you get to see
well,
those little things.
Yeah, yeah. You can stop it. Yeah.
By the way, we do have something really cool happening with Pluto soon. So I know that's. I'm just saying this in the middle.
Yeah,
so,
that sounds like fun. I can't wait to do that.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and I think we're just going to have a blast with it. So we'll tell you more details as that comes up. All right, let's talk about the thing that you were just going to talk about. We have Cress Williams' character, Deshaun Hardell. We get to see him here. He looks great, man. I mean, he's just so great on this show, and he has such a special relationship with Donna. You know, first off, let me ask you, like, we've talked a long time ago on this podcast about the possibility that we would see a relationship with, and sometimes I bring these things back up because people are too lazy to go back to the old episodes where we've certainly talked about this. But we've talked about the idea that at some point Deshaun Hardell and Donna Martin were going to kiss. That was going to happen, and then it did not happen.
Well, it certainly was pitched in the room to Mr. Spelling in his office, and it was shot down. Yeah, I remember that quite clearly.
Well, he didn't want to offend his
Texas friends. Yeah,
the woman he was the elderly woman from Texas who cooked for them, and she felt she didn't want to see a white gal with a you know handsome black man. She did, and that was enough for Spelling to say it's okay. We're not doing this.
All right, Larry, we have you here now.
Hey, there he is. All right.
You know what it was, guys? You know what it was? My computer is.
Larry?
It was doing updates.
Computer I hate updates. That. I hate updates.
Oh, that is so aggravating.
I hate updates.
I understand that, yeah.
Especially when you have something going on and then.
Windows takes over the world.
Yes. Wait, so to this point, okay, so that was going to happen, and that's why it didn't happen. But it's interesting because now in this episode, art imitates life in a way, because now Deshaun is caught dancing, is dancing with Donna at the big shindig here, and Felice is judging from afar, and then they do have a conversation, which is essentially, you know, a conversation that is about systemic racism. You know what I mean? It's something that we talk about a whole bunch. Go ahead, Larry. Or Chuck, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just narratively, it's a hugely missed opportunity. You even could have done, brought Jamie in just a little later or at the same time. You could have done a lot of different things. But we went with Jamie was where we were going with it, and we were happy with that as an alternative. You know, I mean, I was disappointed that there was this, old school prejudice. You know, the Jewish Southern paranoia. I don't know. You know, it's not fair to talk about it now, but I'm aware of that. You know, this all these making of these shows were give and take. And when you got down into issues like where we would, that there were sometimes you just had to give.
The thing is, we used it, though, but we used it to expose systemic racism.
Yes, we did it in a different way, you know.
It would have been nice to have the Kiss and also Felice commenting.
Yes.
The Kiss would have been, I don't know, I guess there had been Kisses before, but it would have been pretty good. I mean, we tried to, and it was real. They had, and that was the other thing in this episode happens. There's really some nice stuff that goes on between Donna and Deshaun in this, which is lovely.
Donna was really almost a different, you know, it's interesting. If you look at the scene, I mean, maybe is Donna in those scenes closest to being who Tori is? She was so confident and in herself. She'd just been in Houston and knew that. And the way she was vibing with him as a friend, you know, was a really clear-eyed Donna, not the Donna that brings. Why is she bringing so much luggage? You know, because we made fun of her.
Sure, no, I know what you mean. Yeah,
mm-hmm. She reinvented herself to basically get her mind off of David, which I thought that really played well. I mean, I thought that was really good writing,
and also an interesting, and a real interesting storytelling. And I love that. I always love that. You know, here we made, in one sense, we made, you know, Kelly be the psych major who's always attuned into people's behavior. But by being that character, she can also kind of dictate and help narrate, you know, motivate where the story is going, give you clues. Because she, you know, is one of the things she realizes what's going on. And then Donna denies. But just for the fact that they've had that conversation, it's in the back of your head. So when it is revealed to Luke, of all people,
yes,
they have a beautiful scene.
It's a smooth flow if you just follow the steps. It's a smooth flow because it's every scene that happens in one sense or the other is very plausible for having happened right then.
Yes,
it they don't stick out like sore thumbs. They're not
emotional reality. Yeah. Earned moments. Very good. Yeah. Well done, us and Jessica. Points.
The thing, too, is that we see Claire Arnold debut here. Right. And of course, I have to bring that up.
She jumps.
She shows up in the middle of this. Grade. Yes. So
AP classes really paid off. They don't lie a lot anymore.
Well, you know, look, she's your crush, but she had to get hello. Larry and I both knew what we had as a really, really cute and fun, but smart
actress
and can, you know, be sexy and funny. And be pleasant to be around was great.
And she's a little bit of a
talking to her, so say hello.
She could be sarcastic.
Will do. She is a little bit of a troublemaker, Claire. Here, you know, like she looks at the Brandon's classes and says that she's going to go to these classes.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. Well, we haven't put her in the beach house yet. She's not.
That's really coming up though, very soon.
Yes, it's just pre.
But also, Kelly says that to Brandon that she thinks that Donna is joined a cult, which is great.
Foreshadowing Finley.
Yes, of course. We knew that. We had broken down 20 episodes. Of course we had.
Season 5 cult.
So you did not know. You did not know you were going to go down that road, or did you know?
No. But, you know,
I one point wanted to do, once we're going to college, I always felt that a teacher being denied tenure had a lot of drama to it. That happened to me at University of Wisconsin in my freshman year. I took the first English class, and this English teacher came in, and then she didn't get tenure. And it was, you know, and it was interesting because she was a woman. It was a she. And the guys didn't want to give, you know, I guess when you do tenure, you split up my funds anyway. So I always was interested in that part where Finley comes into it, not knowing how that would ever manifest itself.
But sure.
Because I like campus politics and stuff. That was always going to be there, that part of it.
Speaking of campus politics, you just reminded me that that's where we see Josh Richland and Brandon Walsh are going to start running a campaign together. This is some of my favorite stuff in 90210.
Me too, looking at it. They you know, saying I like that campus politics stuff. And if you were going to do it with the kind of insider cynicism and yet, you know, and be able not to get bogged down in that. You know, and Josh, you know, was great for that.
The actor Josh is so great because Josh Beckett is just feels like Josh Richland. You know what I mean? He just nails this character, you start hating him, but then you wind up like adoring the character that they go through this whole process together. But you see some of the early steps here. You know, what do you think of Joshua Beckett? Charles, I know that we've talked to him here, and you adore his work here.
Oh yeah, he was well. He came, yes. I knew his family, his dad, his stepmom. Very, very, very classic kind of LA background, and I think he's a therapist, right? We did one with him. It was a good conversation.
It was really great. Yeah,
deals with people's trauma.
Yes. Okay, so I do have this clip. It's 8 minutes long. If you want to say goodbye, Chuck, because you have things to do, that's
totally. I really do. Stuff's coming up, so I got it. I got 10. A lot of stuff for Grandpa. I'm Grandpa Charlie. Very proud of my 3 grandchildren, particularly Helen B. Passman. Love her very much.
All right, Chuck. Thank you for your time here, and you know, talking about Jessica. I know that's really important to everybody here today. But right now, we're going to go to a clip where we talked to Mark Damon Espinosa earlier. He's going to talk about his storyline and working with Gabrielle. There's a lot of heavy, great Jesse Vasquez stuff in this episode. There is the stuff with you and Andrea, or you and Gabrielle, you know, picking a nursery or daycare, right? Then there's this great scene with you and Luke where Jesse refuses to serve Dylan because he's drunk and underage. So do you have any memories of this episode? I don't know if you got a chance to watch it. I know I sent it late to you.
Yeah, I didn't get the chance to watch it. It's been a lot going on with my own family, so I didn't get the email till late last night. But I do remember it pretty well. That was a big day, and I remember this is at the bar, correct?
Doheny's.
So it was probably second or third episode of season 5, is that right?
Yeah, second episode. Yeah,
second episode. I remember it because I remember it being a big group day, an enormous group day. There's a lot of extras and a background. It was at the bar, and to be honest, what I remember about it most was Luke wanting me to walk with him off the set, because I would always generally walk with the background or whoever was around. But Luke wanted me to walk with him off set. We ran lines that morning. It's something I love doing with Luke, because Luke was a very serious actor. He wanted to run lines. He wanted to rehearse. He wanted to get it before he started working. And I loved working with the guy. But it was him putting his arm around me and wanting and steering me away from the crowd and wanting to walk with him back to our trailers that I remember. I remember the day, and I remember having fun with the Shakers, and there were 2 really beautiful young ladies they put at the bar that I was flirting with. And then the scene works. Luke comes into the scene. So I remember that aspect of it in a big day. But what I remember the most was that time with Luke, oddly enough, offset. So yes, I do remember the episode very well.
And there's this great stuff with you and Gabrielle doing. There's this whole thing about you guys, you know, picking a nursery and all this stuff. So talk to me about working with her. I know we've talked about that in the past here, but doing some of that scene as the character was developing, you know, as Jesse was developing, tell me about tapping into this father role that you were kind of doing here.
Well, I was a dad in real life very late. Kate was born when I was 43. So 44, I'm forgetting my math. I've always loved kids. I've had nieces. So the babies that we had to work with, I loved holding the babies, and the babies were generally pretty good with me. As far as working with Gab, I got to tell you, I was in New York working on a show recently, and she was there. We got a chance to have dinner. and we sat, and we hadn't seen each other physically. We talked on the phone, but because of lockdown, et cetera, we hadn't seen each other in 3 years, probably. We talked, but not physically been in the same place. It's like we're married. It's still all the, and I know she's married to Charlie. She's in love with Charlie. She's got two grown daughters, but we get together and it's like we're married. And we pick up where we leave off. It just flows. And this is however many years later, and it still flows that way with she and I. I'm probably far too biased. I adore her so much for so many reasons, not just as a professional or as a friend, but I respect her as a union leader and all the things she does. She's just extraordinary. But she always, when we're together, she can always pull it back to our friendship. And it does feels like we're married. It feels like we're married.
So sweet. That's so sweet. It was really nice.
And it always did. If I can, to go back to my very first episode that I was on, it was the 20th anniversary for
Jim and Cindy.
And it was the first day they had moved. I was basically back around the first day. And I can't remember, one of the ADs brought me to Gabrielle, and Gabrielle was sitting with some friends, sitting and chatting. And that was the first time we met. And I'll never forget her standing up and smiling really big and welcoming me and giving me a hug. And then in that moment, all the anxiety, because I had no idea what I was walking into. I went from doing Shakespeare for $200 a week to being on the hottest show on TV with all these very famous kids or young people. I had no idea what to expect. And the minute she gave me a hug and said, welcome, I knew I was safe. You know, I knew I could relax and breathe. And it's never really changed since then. You know, she is just that way.
And I think that comes through even on screen. You know, I mean, when Jesse and Andrea are together and they're picking the daycare and all this stuff, like there is this sort of familiarity with each other and this connection that they have. And maybe because of that hug or whatever, it just made you even more comfortable in the role.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Chuck or Larry, any questions for Jesse about this, or are we all good to go here?
I really like the fact that the way that you did this is that, you know, when you looked at him and immediately, and I'm talking about the scene with Dylan and pulling the drink out of his hands. Are you trying to get me fired?
Yeah.
That all of a sudden it just, and we talked about, you know, the writing, you know, a script written by Chip Johansson is just has just these gems, every scene has gems in it. And that was one that just to go straight to, it's not just about you, you know, messed up young man. It's about me too, the one who's working his way through law school in this. And it just always was that reinforced that you were a different cat than all these other 90210ers. You had a different background. You had a different sets of interests, and you know, could carry that off with a line and just a look. You looked a guy straight in the eye, and I thought that was very powerful. And also, I wanted to bring that up to show Larry and Pete that I actually watched the episode or the part that I hadn't seen on the watch along. I did go back last night. Yesterday was kind of a trying day in Rosenworld, so. Watch it. I just wanted them to know that too.
Yeah, we all kind of in watching the scene, the girl who Dylan picks up all caught our eye the second time around here because she was pretty wonderful. We were hoping we're going to get her on the show in a couple of weeks. We think maybe.
Yes, she had. She's another one.
Carhart, is that her name?
Yes, it was something different then. She's married now. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you know, she was great. This is the body shot girl that we'll talk about in the full episode. Yeah, and we'll hopefully get her on as a bonus interview at some point as well. I thought that scene was great, and then Dylan has a great line too. Someone mixed up a bartender and a lawyer.
Oh right. Yeah. No, that scene plays really well because it's all part of this Bad Boy Dylan episode, which is so strong.
Yeah, really good stuff. All right, Mark, thank you so much for your time, man. It's always good to see you, buddy. And sorry that we started on such
bad news
no,
here.
No. Thanks for sharing the news. I appreciate it. And good to see you guys. Good to see you
Absolutely.
Guys. Much love to you.
All right. See you guys soon. Thank All right. You. Bye.
So that was Mark Damon a little bit earlier giving his thoughts on. Do you have any thoughts on that particular storyline with the daycare and all that?
Back to the Jesse Vasquez. Yeah, I mean, indeed, that story, Jessica had that boyfriend, and she really pushed for that. You know, we were looking to, you know, do something a little bit different with Andrea's boyfriend, and it was a chance for us to, even though we didn't say it, to diversify the cast, you know.
Sure.
And another kind of a texture, you know, another L.A. guy, but not a Beverly Hills guy, you know, kind of like what we did with Ray later on.
Yeah.
But, no, I like that. And the daycare thing, I have to say I didn't care.
There's
a lot of emotion and reality. We're trying to build up the young couple, but we had other things where we were going.
Sure.
But we're trying to be real also, and that would be a real problem. You know, are you going to be able to spend time with your baby or not? And so,
as
Chuck said, it was a big deal. And it plays nicely.
There's early conflicts between the couple too, right? You know, deciding and picking and all these kinds of things. So you are... You're laying the groundwork. You have to answer for it because it happened last season. It was such a big episode.
Oh, no, we committed to the baby. We weren't going to hide it. So you're looking for, you know, again, when you're doing 32 hours a year, you're looking for story. And
and
you're looking for authenticity too. As a young couple, you know, what are they going through? And we know we're going to have affairs and other stuff. That's all
sure.
mixed up as sweeps that come by. But in the meantime, you got to get to that. You got to earn it with real moments. So yeah, I think the kids play it well. I was really glad, though, that he got the chance to play with Luke there in such a strong scene. And yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it was a good episode. Also, we didn't give enough credit to that gentleman who played Travis. He was terrific.
Oh, God, right, Travis. Oh, somebody told me that Tori, they saw, Christelle told me that she saw Tori and Jenny member for a while. They were doing, like, live shows. And someone asked, I think, Tori if she can do the Texas dip. And she sadly cannot do the Texas dip anymore.
Well, she tried. Actually, we should spend one moment to say how magnificent that was for her to do.
Yes.
And yeah, she was really on the top for a game. That was an excellent storyline for her. How do I block my mind out of Dallas? I get reinvented in Houston. I've got to be a debutante. You know, we know in our hearts we're not going to go there.
Sure.
But at least it's good for a story and to play out. And again, it gives our dear friend Michael Durrell. We don't know how he's doing. He doesn't come on the show. I
saw that email. Did you see that?
Doc Martin.
Yeah.
And then Felice, Catherine Cannon, just, you know, kills it and playing. She really commits to this character. And the character, you know, for better or worse, rings true. I mean, and in a way, Mr. Spelling, being a Jewish person from Texas, always felt a little bit defensive in the way he would see things. And so the
sure.
black thing, you know, he would kind of hide his thing. You don't want to kind of, you know, lay it out there. And I thought Chuck's explanation about the housekeeper was really good. And, we were able to use his attitude and expose it.
In fairness, though, I mean, to Mr. Spelling, yes, that. But also, you know, there are a lot of states in this country that at that time, if they had seen that happen, it could have been a difficult a turnoff. Yeah,
our thinking was, it would, you know, again, water cooler stuff, you know.
Right, sure, of course.
You want to, even then we didn't know the term viral, but we were looking at, you know, get viewers. It was really a primitive time, you know.
Totally should have happened. It would have been an amazing thing. It would have buttoned that scene up even further.
That he kisses her.
Yeah,
and she has it. We expose Felice.
Yes,
then it would have made that story even deeper. But you know, we got a little piece of it.
Definitely.
And we were able to develop that relationship between a friendship between them. It's just so unfortunate that Cress Williams will not come on this show. He will not even talk to us. And
well,
you know what? We gave him his start in show business. He was a student at UCLA and he couldn't play basketball. Okay.
Right.
Cress, come on. Talk to me, Cress.
What's the issue? What could be the issue?
We had to shoot around you.
I mean, look, I know he's doing big, huge shows. We get that. But
I'm getting mad. You know,
it's upsetting. It's upsetting, but let's keep this about.
We have to bring out your nephew again, the Kathleen killer.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, yeah.
The guy who got Kathleen to acknowledge us.
Okay, maybe that's a good idea. We may have to start. Might have to start going down that road.
All right. It's really worth it. We don't get to talk about that character
enough. Yeah, we should do a whole. We should do a whole Deshaun episode, actually. Okay, so
then we should just do a Tiffany rumor episode. Why Tiffany won't do anything with anybody else in the cast?
That's fascinating.
We'll ask the fans their rumors thing. We'll do like a rumor mill and really love kind it. Of and burn her basically.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to burn her, but you know, we want to definitely get to the
nicest way.
Sure, of course. Yeah, we definitely want her.
I mean, we want to honor her work. We have
to yes, and we do want her to come on here and hang out with us and have some laughs.
She created such an immoral. I mean, as the character got developed, I mean. You know, she was bad.
she was
broken. She was broken and psychologically damaged.
Great. All right, listen. I want to share some of these things about Jessica. The fans have been writing all day, so I wanted to. You know, Connor says awful news about Jessica. Allison says my heart and prayers are going out to her daughter and family. Crystal Hayes says our friend Crystal Hayes. Remember, I love watching her on the podcast. Velvet wants to know, not related, how are you doing with COVID? Are you okay? Are you better?
I'm 14 days away, so yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I was out cleansing today. I also got a thing from Darren Martin. He reached out to me and, you know, just sent his condolences knowing what we were feeling and as he's feeling too. He's such a sweet man and we really miss him on the podcast.
Miss him a lot, yeah.
Come home, Darren.
Yeah, we'd love to have him on here, especially for that.
And obviously, you know, Dr. Weiss of Teen Pharmology. Yes. She was a good friend of Jessica's. They were close.
Jessica was a blessing. Yeah, that's what she said here to Shira and Shea, and them to her. Rebecca Shin says, thinking of her daughter and grandchildren today, as well as all of you, she was always such a joy to watch. God bless Jessica and her family. Let's see. When Jessica showed up on the podcast, it made my day. Absolutely loved her. That's from Kristen McIsaac. So just a lot of really beautiful comments about our friend Jessica. So, all right, Larry.
It's unimaginable, really. It's hard. It hasn't really quite sunk in, even though we know it was coming. But cause she was young. She was young. Oh, well, yeah. Anyway. May her spirit soar.
Now I understand that this is not coming down until the end of the month. The scaffold is not.
Oh yeah, the scaffolding. No. I had a big meeting on that today. So
I don't know if that's made it to the podcast, but that's big news in our world. Now I'm going to go to the cantina, which is just incredible down on Washington.
Which one are you going to? Cabo Cantina or Baja Cantina?
Oh, Baja.
Baja's the bigger one.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Maybe they found their way because it used to be great. It was a commissary for us, and then new people took it over, and we didn't like the menu so much, and we haven't been back as much. So it's good to hear that you like it, man. No, I think you got the whole vibe going on. You go to Thomas's, man. That's pretty hip. My sons go there.
Oh, the Thomas's pretty is where funny. It's at in the morning. Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Oh, good for you. You haven't gone to the Cow's End, or you've gone to the Cow's End?
No, I haven't gone to the Cow's End. Yeah. Should I check that out? Yeah.
Yeah, the Cow's End's, you know, it's kind of in the first block, right next to Cabo Cantina. The Cow's End. It's a coffee place.
Nice. I've seen that.
It's a real thing. And upstairs you can sit and stuff. And you know,
oh, that sounds amazing.
You know, so that place is pretty cool. And look, the Whalers, classic place too. The Whalers.
I went there the other day. That was amazing. Yeah,
did you go to Hedano's yet? Did you go to Hedano's? The dive bar in the middle of across the street.
No, I have to check that out. Yeah.
That's where Jim Morrison hung out.
Oh, I'm going there.
It hasn't changed at all. It's a real dive bar.
And I'm going to go there.
Live rock and roll music there on the weekend.
Have a drink for Jessica. You know, I think, you know. A Cam fan asks, are you still house sitting for Larry Pete? Yes, that's why I'm here. Yes, in this place. So, all right, man, this has been great. We will see you next week. We're going to plan this super show for Jessica. You'll come up with a way better name. And we've got something really cool and awesome happening.
I have a bad name. Jessica Argogo.
Okay.
That's not good. That was the first thing that came to mind. Jessica Palooza.
Jessica Palooza. That's it. Palooza Jessica Palooza. But anyway, we got this huge thing going on with Pluto.
Yeah, so what is it exactly?
So, I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it just yet, but it's just we're going to be doing a very cool version of a watch along with them, if as long as it all plays the right way.
Like,
and
there'll be like a lot of people watching with us.
A ton of people, and everybody will be welcome to join us, and it will be done through some other thing, not through the podcast. So you'll have to tune in for that. And we're going to bring some guests. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're planning all that. So Pluto TV, man, that's where it's at. You know, hey, let me tell you, man. Every night I've been watching Pluto TV. They've got old Stones shows. They've got rock concerts. I mean, I don't even know if you know about that.
It's,
yeah.
It's, you know, again, my friend Joe Adelian is, you know, is the streaming guy, and Pluto is the number one. It's the number one of whatever that tier is called, like paid free streaming or something. Because obviously there's Paramount Plus and then there's Pluto, and Pluto is so successful they weren't able to collapse it into Paramount Plus. It's been so lucrative for them.
Yeah, it's going to be really awesome. We can't wait for it. They've been really helpful with us. So.
And yes, we want swag. We'll get some swag.
Oh, yeah. I meant to reply to that email. Yes, we want some more swag. Yes.
Yeah, more swag.
Okay, guys. Okay, well, that was see everybody next week, man.
Yeah. I survived my update. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, sounds good. Bye-bye.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.